HudsonRiverRadio.com. It beats listening to nothing.
It's Frank. My goodness, it's Frank. Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank.
Hello and welcome to Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. I'm your host, Frank Lobono. We'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Intelligent Conversation Podcast. We know that your time is valuable, and let's face it, competition is fierce. Lots of podcasts out there. But we like to think of ourselves as an alternative to all that noise. So we appreciate you sharing some of your day with Being Frank. You know, we stream from HudsonRiverRadio.com where the mailman, Mr. Neil Richter, is our engineer. You know, he always delivers. And that's our so-called home base. But remember, you can download us wherever and whenever you listen to your favorite podcasts. That includes iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, Spreaker, and all the others. You can find the links on our Being Frank Facebook page, and please think about becoming a subscriber and leaving us a comment. As I mentioned, we have our own Facebook page, Being Frank. It's public, so check it out and follow the page for more information about the podcast. We bring our audience a new topical program every week, beginning late on Thursdays, well, let's say Fridays for sure. Listen at your convenience, and every program is archived, so you can listen to any Being Frank virtually any time that you want. It's certainly the intelligent thing to do. Tonight, we're taping on the, when is it? It's the 29th? Yeah, I think. It's the 29th of March. I always catch up eventually. Well, due to a family emergency, our original guest, Mr. Paul Adler, was forced to cancel his appearance. We send our concerns and best wishes to Paul and his family. Don't worry, he'll be rescheduled when the opportunity comes through again. But thanks to the efforts of two of my favorite people and some of the best baseball minds that I know, we will be having some intelligent conversation on Being Frank about baseball, of course. Today was opening day for all 30 Major League Baseball teams, the first time that's happened since 1968. And radical new rules have been put in place in an attempt to make the game move faster with more exciting play. But will they work? Well, we're going to talk about that this evening, or whenever you're listening to us, I should say. Joining us now, a filmmaker, philanthropist, and a whole bunch of other things too much to read, and a man who counts the days from the end of one baseball season to the beginning of another, and it's finally here, Joe Allen. Joe's been a frequent guest, and we welcome him back in this capacity as a baseball aficionado. Let's call him that, at least. Hello, Joe. Welcome back again.
Thank you very much, Frank. It's New Year's Day. And it's 150 days since baseball ended, maybe one or two more than that. And we're back and into the freedom zone again. We don't have to rely on, if we don't want to, hockey, basketball, football, or anything else. We have baseball back now.
We have the game, and we're going to talk about that. Joining Joe and myself and Neil and you guys who are listening. Remember, I remembered not to say viewers. We're not viewing anymore. We're listening. It only took me a year and a month or two to get that right. But anyway, we're there. And we have sports producer. Again, this is a very truncated version of these guys, very accomplished men. He's a sports producer at CBS, and the creator and host of the blog Metstradamus, and John Coppinger. John, welcome once again. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you for having me, and to all that are listening, and to you guys, to John and Neil. Thank you very much, and happy opening day to all of you, to those who celebrate.
Yes, and there are people who do celebrate. And I remember, and I'll probably still get in trouble, my mother's 99 and might be listening. But one day that we got to play hooky from school and kind of got excused was for opening day. For me in particular, as a Yankee fan, I went to Yankee Stadium. I know you guys are generally Mets fans, although New York fans, but certainly preferably the Mets. But my experience with the Yankees was on opening day to kind of disappear from school and sit in the bleachers and watch opening day. Today, a unique experience with all 30 30 teams playing on the same day, as we mentioned, and it's been 5 decades since then, 1968. What are your feelings on that? Is it worth mentioning, commemorating at all? Joe, you want to?
Yeah, I do think it's worth mentioning. I think it's a big thing that, along with the balanced schedule that is out there now. But I remember just opening day has been a miracle to me. After going through the winter, when I was 13 years old, they put a Major League Baseball stadium in my neighborhood in Queens, and I suddenly had what I never thought I would have before, and that my friends in the Bronx, my friends in Upper Manhattan seemed to have. That was a baseball stadium. And not only that, I could see it from my house, and my parents would allow me to take my bike there. I went to Shea Stadium the day before it opened in 1964, and I just stood outside, and I had a 13-year-old version of a holy you-know-what moment, and I must have said that 20 times, and I looked at the Serval zipper sign out in the outfield, and I watched the trains go by, and it never went away in all this time. I'm a little older than that. And there's no more Shea Stadium, but it's a wonderful and miraculous thing.
John, you're a Queens boy as well, and people can't see you, but I can, as we record this to tape. And you're wearing your Mets jersey and Mets hat. What does it mean to you to have the professional baseball team in your home borough?
It's well, first off, I can't believe that you could have had anybody on your show. And you found somebody that actually lived closer to Shea Stadium than me, which is amazing. I grew up on Roosevelt Avenue between 82nd and 83rd. So I've since moved to another neighborhood in Queens, but I'm still within walking distance of the area over there before Shea Stadium and now Citi Field. Opening day through today is a holiday. You know, everybody. Everybody's 0-0, and everybody notices you in your jersey and your hat, and they'll give you a "Let's go Mets," or they'll give you a happy opening day. I heard you share stories about opening day, and I want to share two quick ones with you, if I can. When I was in fourth grade, it was 1980, and you know, my mother would always be sure to write notes for me if I had to skip half a day of school. Like, I would go in the morning. I'd come home for lunch. I lived a block away from school, and then I would go back for the end of my day. And there were a few times where I didn't go back for the end of my day, but my mom would always bail me out with a note: "Please excuse my son; his stomach hurt, or if it wasn't bad, he had a cold." And it went back and forth, back and forth. So, 1980 opening day, my father had taken me to opening day, so I didn't go back for the second half of school. And I came back, and then so the next day I went to school, and I got the note from my mom, the bailout note. I didn't even read it, thinking, okay, what's it going to be? Stomach flu or flu. And right before I handed the note in to Miss Licht, who was the strictest and meanest teacher in the whole school of PS 89, I looked at it and I said, I wonder what mom said. So I read the note, and it said, "Dear Miss Licht, please excuse my son for not going to the attending the second half of school. He was at opening day." And then she signed it, and then she said, "P.S. The Mets won 5-2." So now I am nervous as anything when I got to go up and hand the teacher this note that says I skipped school to go see a baseball game. So I hand it to her. I walk away hoping she doesn't say anything. But then I got the "Wait a minute." And I stopped, and she said to me in front of the whole class, "You mean to tell me that you skipped school to go to a Mets game?" And I said to her, "Yes, but it was opening day." And she said in front of the class, "Well, as long as the Mets won." Yeah. So that was story number one. And story number two was 3 years later was Tom Seaver's return to Shea Stadium when he returned to the Mets. So I was at a different school, but my mom still gave me the bailout note. My son had to go to the dentist, so I snuck off and I went to see Tom Seaver come back, and it was still one of the seminal moments, opening day moments. As far as opening day moments go, that's right up there for me. So those are my two quick opening day stories.
You know, guys, you're both big sports fans. John, as a professional producer of sports, you know, you have to give kind of equal time to football, baseball, hockey, et cetera, et cetera. Joe, I know you are also a sports fan, and particularly New York sports fan, Knicks, Rangers, Giants, Jets, et cetera. But baseball seems to shine brightest for both of you. Joe, why don't you take it first? Why baseball over all others?
Because you get to do something in baseball that you don't get to do in the other sports. And that is, whatever your team is, you get to walk through that tunnel and walk out and be exposed to that incredible green and that luscious dirt that's around the infield. And you get to see all the other people, and you get to see the signs, and you see who's advertising. And even though it might be cold on opening day, you've gotten that feeling of walking out there. I've always debated what's better, to walk out in the when it's dark, or walk out there when it's daylight. But there's no other feeling like that. And I've covered all sports. I was a radio reporter in an earlier life, so I've covered all the sports. There's just no feeling like walking out in a baseball stadium. And I grew up we were kind of all screwed up because my father took my brother and I to see a Yankee game. They're playing the Tigers, and Al Kaline made an incredible catch in the outfield, as he
great
did
seemingly
every time he played the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, I might have been 8, my brother 5, but from that moment on, he was Al Kaline and I was Mickey Mantle in every game of single, double, triple we ever had, in every stickball game we ever had. And we were both on opposite sides. And then when the Mets, when Shea came in, we both kind of dropped that allegiance a little bit. And now we were Met fans, and we had everything from Choo Choo Coleman and Jay Hook winning the first game ever. And it was an incredible run to have Shea, and then working for both teams in later years, it's been amazing. But there's just nothing like walking out into a baseball stadium.
John, your feelings, again, as I said, you covering all sports with equal enthusiasm, but I get the feeling that baseball's the special one for you. Why?
I think baseball will always be the special one. I mean, I'm a big New York Rangers fan as well as a Mets fan, so I love my hockey in the winter. I love the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I think what endears me to baseball, it's just that it's when it's in season, it's every day. You know where you're going to be at 7:10 every night. You're going to be in front of your TV watching your team play. And it's just and it's funny because fans of sports now, and or fans of anything now, they're not really into the routine of anything. Now, somebody put it great the other day, said, you can't binge watch a season. You can't just go in and pop, oh, okay, I'm going to get this season done in 3 days. No, you got to let a season breathe over 162 games and the postseason. It's a 6-month odyssey where you're in there every day, and it's an ever evolving animal. And there's not really that downtime to worry about. What did this guy say at practice? What did this guy do on his off day? What did he post on his Instagram? You know, there's nothing really like that for baseball, a little bit, but it's just the everyday enjoyment of it. And it's just the comfort of it, that every night, except for the very rare off day, every night you're going to see your team play at 7:10 or 1:40 or 1:10. It's mm-hmm. always there for you. And that's what makes summer special, is that baseball is always there for you.
You know what strikes me now, Frank?
Go ahead, Joe.
I think of my dad, and long gone, and he passed away before the media explosion of the last 30 years. And I remember he bringing home the New York Post or the Long Island Press or some other paper, the Daily News, and me poring over those box scores, because that was the only way that I could get it. And God forbid when the Yankees or the Mets went out to the West Coast, and then I couldn't get it for 2 days. Now the immediacy of it, I'm sure my dad would be envious as all heck of the way that people can access the sport now. I mean, there's just nothing that goes by, and it's at the point where if my team doesn't win, I don't even bother watching the post game. If they win, I watch it because I want to hear the interviews and I want to hear the manager. But there's just nothing like being able to open up that paper and going about 15 pages in after Jerry Donato made his predictions and after going through the whole thing. And now I've got the box score, and what did Kubek do, and how did Richardson do, and whatnot, and 69, what did Clendenin do when I became a Clendenin devotee when he came to the Mets? It just was incredible.
You know, people will never know the stress of waiting, of those West Coast road trips, and waiting for the late edition of a newspaper.
And you know, and as kids, little things that you think of in your head. And when I was young, I used to think like, well, I don't understand, if somebody went, for example, got one hit in four at bats, it's a 250 average, okay, so a quarter of the time they're successful. But I never understood, but he homered, shouldn't that be worth extra points? A home run's got to be worth at least two or three extra average points.
Well, now you kind of have that. That's what slugging percentage and OPS is.
Eventually,
your dreams came true.
Yeah, eventually you get into metrics, but that was something as a kid, we never thought of such things as metrics. And my father tried to explain, no, it's a matter of percentage. That doesn't matter how far you hit it. So that always was something that impressed me. Coaches used to tease us, you'd hit a dribbler down the third base line, and I was really quick, and I could leg it out for a base hit. And they said, tomorrow you could tell everybody it was a screaming line drive. They'll never know the difference. A hit is a hit is a hit. So that's kind of the little nuances of the game that I always got a kick out of. Guys, I think before we go any further, too, we've got to talk about not only the unusual fact that all teams play today for the first time in five decades, the rule changes. Some of them are extreme. And in discussions with my stepson, Jeremiah, he's not too happy about most of them. He doesn't necessarily think they'll improve the game. They'll just add more confusion, which will detract from the overall game. Let's go over some of the more important rules. John, what do you think of? There's a bunch of them. What are some of them that stand out to you as the most, I can't say egregious because they may work out, but certainly something that definitely will change the pace of the game and therefore the actual perhaps outcomes of the games?
Well, I'll lead off by saying this. Baseball needed to do something. You know, we've always said, well, the game will self-correct. That's what we've always said when there's been a change in the game. The game will self-correct. And when it hasn't self-corrected, like 1968, the year of the pitcher, that's when they had to do something drastic, which was lower the mound so that guys wouldn't have ERAs of 112. So I think this was one of those times where the game wasn't self-correcting. And I don't mind spending 4 hours, 4.5 hours in a baseball stadium, but the games had become boring. With the emphasis on the three true outcomes, it was like watching slow pitch softball, and it just, something had to be done. So as much as purists may want to say, well, the pitch clock, you know, the baseball shouldn't have a clock because it was the only sport that didn't have a clock. I would argue that the game needed a pitch clock. I think 15 seconds between pitches with nobody on base is going to drastically put the game on a better pace. I mean, how long was The Godfather, the movie? Would you say 3:30, 4 hours?
3:30, yeah.
Right. So you know what a baseball game is? If a baseball game was like The Godfather, then you could sit there for 4 hours. But you know what baseball games are when they're not The Godfather? They're boring.
Right.
So they had to do something. I think the pitch clock is going to work. I think they may have to tweak some things with the pitch clock with runners on base, make it a little more, maybe give them 5 more seconds instead of 20, make it 25. And the one thing I think will make it confusing is the disengagement. You can only throw over twice. Yes, you can only call timeout once as a batter. You only have 2 step offs as a pitcher. I think it's going to be confusing for a lot of the people involved. But I also think, you know, when watching the games today, there was a lot of strategy involved. After Max Scherzer threw twice to try to pick off Gene Segura, then you're wondering, okay, is he going to steal? Right. And then if somebody gets off to a big lead and you throw that third pickoff and you hope to get them, because you could throw a third pickoff, but you got to get them. Yeah. So I think there's going to be some strategy that we haven't seen before. And I think it's going to be compacted into a shorter period of time. So it's going to make the game move with more pace. The Mets, I think, were 2 hours, 50 minutes today. The Yankees were 2:30. And the game is going to move. There's going to be more action. There's going to be singles. There's going to be steals. There's going to be a variety of things happening in a baseball game. And the long-term effect is that you're going to have a variety of skill sets that are going to be looked at in baseball players. Right now, they're only drafting for a generation, baseball teams have drafted only a certain type of player, the big, hairy guys that can hit the ball 5,000 miles. Now with speed having more of a making more of a difference in the game with larger bases, maybe a guy like Juan Pierre or maybe a guy like Maury Wills will be looked at again in terms of kids coming up playing baseball. So you're going to have a great variety of people that are going to be looked at to play this game. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
So overall positive, you give it overall.
So far, absolutely. I think there's going to be some bumps in the road for sure. Jeff McNeil had a strike called on him today because Pete Alonso didn't get back to first base fast enough, which is as a base runner, which was interesting and I think was a misapplication of the rules. But as long as umpires institute some common sense, which I'm not confident in at all because I don't think umpires have common sense, I think it'll be okay.
Joe?
Yeah, I love the rule changes. And I love it for a variety of reasons. For one, I love the fact that the Yankees were 2 hours and 33 minutes today. I love that. I just remember watching the Yankees and Red Sox seemingly all the time, and it was 4 hours. The problem with that is I believe we were losing a generation of baseball fans. Kids were not really, kids are losing their affinity for baseball. They're finding it so much easier to access basketball and so much easier to access even football. Baseball has been really, really tough on a whole generation. And if we didn't do anything to speed it up and to move it quickly, it would have been a problem. How in the world can you sit down with your 7-year-old and watch an important game that you know darn well is going to be over at 11:30 if you're watching a Fox game? You can't do it. You've got to be able to give them a break. And secondly, we're in a communication era right now where quickness, where speed, where 1-minute TikToks, where short videos that go on Facebook, that's the way people are accessing it. It's not the James Earl Jones description of baseball sitting out there in your shirt sleeves on a warm summer day. It's not that way anymore. It's got to move, and we've got to be able to compete. I work at the Boulders. I'm in charge of all the nonprofit activity at the Boulders.
But you can explain to people, Joe, because
the Boulders are an independent minor league team in Pomona, New York. And they've been around for 12 years, and I work for them, and it's the same problem on the minor league level, even more because on the minor league level they don't know the players, right? If I know that Aaron Judge is batting fourth in an inning, I don't mind sitting there and waiting to see if somebody gets on so Judge can get on. If you don't know the players in independent minor league baseball, then you don't even have that. So you have to be able to move it along. I love the bigger bases. I love being able to figure how much more speed matters. And I love getting having four every infielder on the dirt and two on each side.
I was just going to say that to me is probably my favorite rule change, is to prevent those radical shifts. You want to shade somebody one way or the other. Absolutely. That was always part of the game.
Yep.
Those radical shifts of putting the entire team virtually on one side of the field or the other was.
You know, just consider this, Frank. Consider watching a baseball game and what that takes to watch it. And then consider what it's like to watch a basketball game at the Garden or in Barclays. And it's pounding. The music is pounding. There's action all the time. There's things going back and forth. How does baseball compete with that? With a generation that's growing up with that kind of speed and short bites of life, you know, so something had to be done. I'm glad they did it.
Let's talk a little bit. And we mentioned some of the great players in the game today, and the name that has already been mentioned in the American League Most Valuable Player and the record-setting home run king in the American League, Aaron Judge, certainly a superstar, an all-tools player. For a big guy, he can run, he can hit for average, he can throw, he hits with power, obviously. Who in your mind, John, we'll start with you, who are some of the great players in the game today?
Well, I think you have to start, the conversation begins and ends with Shohei Ohtani. He's doing things in baseball that no one's done before, not in the same season. I mean, he's Babe Ruth. He's Babe Ruth early and late in his career at the same time. And he's doing it on an international stage at the World Baseball Classic. He's performing both tasks, pitching and hitting at a high level, something that nobody thought was possible in terms of not having enough hours in a day to prepare as a pitcher and a hitter. And what he's doing is just absolutely incredible. And I don't think it's talked about enough.
Well, I was going to ask you about that.
How good he is.
Do you think the fact that he plays for a West Coast team and they're right now the Angels aren't really contenders, does that hurt him? Because he's really not a household name. I think outside of people who are real hardcore fans, you mention his name and it's obviously Japanese, it's quote unquote foreign to us, etc. Does he really get the credit he should be getting?
I think he's starting to now with his World Baseball Classic performance, striking out his teammate
Mike
Trout to end the World Baseball Classic for sure. And definitely if he had played for the Dodgers, which I think he will do next year, I think that will help him. I think him making a seismic move from LA team to LA team is going to brighten his star even more, because then you know he'll be in the postseason and he'll be on the grandest stage in America like he was in the world at the World Baseball Classic.
He gave us a moment, that last at bat against Trout. I mean, that was a moment of drama that
absolutely
was as good. I mean, that's up there with lots of other dramatic moments that I've seen. And this was in an exhibition. It counted for the World Baseball Classic, but it didn't count. It wasn't the World Series. It wasn't for all the marbles. It was for no marbles or none that I discerned. But it was still about as dramatic a moment as you're going to see.
And if you listen to these players, the World Baseball Classic does have a lot of marbles for them. This is the first generation of players that grew up with international play in baseball. We hadn't had a real international play before in baseball. So this meant something to the players, and it meant something to a lot of fans around the world. And I think even, you know, who it meant to the least was probably American baseball fans. And that's, but I think generationally, I think that's slowly changing as well.
So it's so interesting that you bring that up, because very practical. I was actually traveling in Europe while the baseball classic was going on. I think we were in Italy, and I was with my stepson, Jeremiah, and the news came out about the great Met reliever, Edwin Diaz, who suffered a season-ending knee injury. And he was livid, absolutely livid, that a frontline player, especially a Met, who the team that he happens to root for, would be quote unquote wasted on something that no one cares about. that it seems to be that the owners are forcing the players to play. He had a very different perspective, and I dare say, as you were saying, an American perspective, where, look, we have our own teams. Why do we need to sacrifice our own guys for games that are essentially meaningless to us?
You know, it's
your thoughts on that, Joe. Take
Frank,
it.
Frank, it's like what happens or what had happened a number of years ago when the hockey guys went to the Olympics. It was the middle of their season, to some place where they could get hurt and it would be ruined. And they're doing that for something that's not professional hockey. And you had that. You also had that with the Dream Team. But the fact is, international sports are getting huge. If you don't believe that, ask the NFL why they're going to London, or ask MLB why they're traveling in places all over the world. They're exporting this sport now. And what they're finding, besides people who never really had access to the sport, they're also finding people who were underserved by the sport, like in countries like the Dominican has given us so many great players, but there wasn't really an opportunity for them to shine as a cohesive unit. Now they can. Now Cuba can. Now Mexico can. So I think it's, if we're trying to make it an international game in pro sports, in every sport, you got to do this. You got to do
it. I'll take it a step further. How about countries like the aforementioned Italy? How about Great Britain? How about
Israel?
The Czech Republic, Israel, who had a big run in the last tournament. Yeah. The Czech Republic, who was, those guys that were playing, they're like dentists and factory workers in their normal lives, and they're playing baseball and they didn't play too bad. I went to a World Baseball Classic qualifier when it was in Brooklyn, where the Cyclones played, and I saw Brazil play Pakistan. Wow. And it was just the most interesting thing because Pakistan, yeah, exactly. You wouldn't think that Pakistan
was famous for cricket, their world champion, so their version of
and watching them try to adapt to this sport was so interesting, because they could play the game. They didn't have any players that had any plus skills, but you look at some of their little habits that they have, like when they would take the field for an inning after they batted, they didn't just take the field like regular ball players. They would all line up on the third base foul line, and then when they all got there, they ran onto the field to start warming up for that half inning. It was amazing to see. But this is how baseball grows. This is how you get more people, more of a pool of players to play your game. It's just what I went back to, what I mentioned before about having different skill sets. You open it up to a bigger pool of people to play the game and to enjoy the game. And I think that's what this World Baseball Classic does. And Great Britain went crazy when they won those two games in the WBC. Israel went crazy in 2017. And there's going to be more countries that are going to be, it's going to make such a huge difference. And you'll see generationally, there'll be players in the major leagues from Great Britain and Pakistan. You'll see, you watch, and that's when baseball truly grows.
It was great. I was in Israel a number of years ago, and Israel has great basketball teams, great basketball leagues. They've got great soccer leagues. They got tremendous tennis players. They're great gymnasts, and throughout the whole country, there's one park outside of Tel Aviv that's a baseball park. And after watching soccer guys for the 2 weeks I was there, to be able to see baseball being born, it was amazing. Very much like you said, to watch the different cultures begin to adapt to it, and to see it become a new thing and a new accepted thing. And I know that there's some kid now who's following MLB from his room in Herzliya outside of Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, and it never was like that before.
You both mentioned, it's a new generation of players. It's a new game, if you will. So is it fair to compare today's players to some of the past? I mean, we've talked about, and you mentioned Al Kaline, a great player from the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, Mickey Mantle, a legendary player, et cetera. Is it fair to make comparisons between today's players and those players? Is the game the same? Is it played the same way? Is it fair to say on an athletic level they could be equal? What are some of your thoughts? Is it fair to compare great players from different eras? And can we even do so? John, why don't you take that first?
I think it's fair because baseball, for the most part, is universal. But I will say this, because I've had this thought the last few weeks, because I remember years ago, or maybe months ago, I was having an argument with somebody about Babe Ruth. If you put Babe Ruth in today's game, how would he do? Now, it's an interesting question, because I think if you took Babe Ruth from 1927 with his 1927 training and 1927 diet, and you dropped him in the major leagues today, I think he'd struggle to hit 200.
Now, so do I.
If you take Babe Ruth and you say, okay, Babe, you're going to be born in 1999. And you're going to be Babe Ruth, but you're right. going to have access to the all training, the best training and nutrition and load management. Then how would he do? Then I think he would be Babe Ruth for sure. And I think you could say that about anybody. I think for the great players, if you could play it today, you could play in 1950. And if you could play in 1950 and you had today's training, you would be what you were then. Baseball's universal. That's the way I see it.
Joe, your thoughts?
You know, I'm not sure I'm all the way there with that, because I think of Babe Ruth and I wonder, Babe Ruth never saw 102 mile an hour fastball. And I don't know how he would do with that. And he probably never saw a pitcher that had four or five pitches. Maybe he did.
Fastball, curveball was pretty
right,
much
right. But they're yeah. The game is really, really different. It's like saying, will great catchers have as much of a pop time as the great catchers now? You know, the guys are going to steal bases on you because someone like Smokey Burgess, catcher for the Pirates back in the day, he could barely get up. You know, and before he moved to the outfield, same thing with Yogi Berra, could barely get up. Now you've got these guys that are up, and if you can't get down and you can't get the ball out in 1.5 seconds, then you know that's like blowing the combine in football. You know, so it's very hard to compare one era from to the next, in my opinion.
You know, another thing that it may sound trite, but it's really not. And as a former player, even the equipment, though, some of the equipment that the older players played with. And I'll give you an example. As a kid, we were playing football. We were assigned our cleats. And I just thought they were these high top, heavy leather, full cleats. It was like trying to run in galoshes and boots. At least that's the way I felt. And then as things improved, Puma came out, Nike, which was a brand new name when I started to get it later into high school and college, and you wore those, I felt like I could fly in them in the difference. And coaches used to say, oh, that's an excuse. You could run in army boots if you had to. No, you can't. No, not the same way with a pair of kangaroo leather Pumas with nylon bottoms. It was a huge difference. And it made a difference to me. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that things do tend to balance out. As you mentioned, improved training and improved equipment, et cetera, raises your game overall. But as a level, as an athlete, these great athletes will always be great.
You know, we're doing something at the Boulders this year to celebrate and pay homage to the Negro Leagues. And back in the day, the uniforms that these guys wore, it was like my grandmother could have knitted that as a sweater. It was ridiculously hot. You could barely move in it, and you're playing ball, and there's no in bad stadiums, and there's nowhere to hide from the sun. So how in the world Can you compare that to what to the uniforms that they're that people are wearing today, let alone all the other protective gear that you have in addition to that?
Spandex was a revelation to me. Oh my God, it stretches. You can wear as tight as you want.
There you go.
It stretches.
You're not going to do the cotton uniforms like George Costanza.
I'm going to tell you, when I was a kid, this is the honest truth, to get into our cotton football pants and you wanted them tight as possible, you had two of your biggest guys each hold a side of the pants lower. You stood on a bench and you jumped into your football pants so they would slide on, because that was the only way you were going to get into them. The difference now to putting on these things, and they stretch and they whisk sweat away, so they stay lightweight and airy through the whole game. We used to wear cotton. If we played in the rain, you had an extra 40 pounds worth of gear on by the end of the game. So it made a big difference.
I want to bring up one aspect of Babe Ruth that would really fit in today's world, where the mantra is let the kids play and let them have swag. I think Babe Ruth would have the most swag in today's game, with as gregarious as he was back in the 20s and being in all the movies and just enjoying the spotlight. He would have adapted very well to the social media world today. He would have loved it. He'd have millions of followers.
And based on what we're all exposed to, did Babe Ruth ever hit a double? Did you ever see Babe Ruth double anywhere? Babe Ruth,
no.
The only pictures I've ever seen of Babe Ruth, he's either hitting a home run and he's got those little pop around legs, or he's running down to first. I can't imagine Babe Ruth making the turn and trying to take two.
Interesting. Guys, well, of course, we've got to talk about predictions, but we've got to take a quick commercial break. They're not long, so don't go anywhere. Joe Allen and John Coppinger, my guest this evening, and we're talking baseball. It was opening day today. We got a six-month season ahead. You don't have to be a big baseball fan to actually enjoy the game. There's something exciting about having two really good teams in New York at the same time, and I believe this year that will be the case. So let's have a little fun with it. You're watching Being Frank. We're the only way to be. There, I said it again. You're listening. I thought you didn't have to get me that time, Neil. I see you smiling there. Caught myself. You're listening to Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. I'm your host, Frank Lobono. We'll be back more with John and Joe right after these brief commercial messages.
HudsonRiverRadio.com. Bring a dash of green into your life. Check out The Many Shades of Green with Maxine Margot Rubin and Malcolm Berman. Get informed about environmental issues and current events that affect us all. Pick a shade of green and raise your eco-consciousness with The Many Shades of Green. Available on Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to check out Hudson River Radio's limited series podcast, Live from Electric Lady Studios, featuring bands like Foreigner, George Thorogood and the Destroyers, and Alice Cooper. Live from Electric Lady Studios was produced in the 1990s by Electric Lady for WNEW-FM in New York City and was hosted by legendary DJ Pat St. John. It featured a different band each time and was recorded live with a small in-studio audience. Check out Live from Electric Lady Studios on Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
HudsonRiverRadio.com.
Welcome back to Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. It's the Intelligent Conversation Podcast. I'm your host, Frank Lobono. We're talking baseball tonight with my two guests, filmmaker and philanthropist Joe Allen, CBS sports producer and creator of the blog Metstradamus, John Coppinger. Guys, we're having so much fun so far talking baseball. As I said, it helps to be a fan, but you don't have to be. It's good conversation. It's intelligent conversation, and it's fun. We talked about some of the good players in the game. We mentioned three in particular, Ohsani, Judge, and Mike Trout. Just three of some of the great players. But now it's time to talk about some of the teams, some of the better teams in the league, and then ultimately who will win it all, your predictions. Joe, let's start with you, if you would. Who do you see as some of the better teams in the league that will fight for the pennant in both the American League and National League, and who will win it all?
Well, I wish the Mets and the Yankees didn't play in the East, because it's one time where I wish we were in the Central, but I think they're going to have both that will have dogfights, but I think they will emerge out of their divisions. I like St. Louis and I like Cleveland, and of course I hate even to say the word Astros, but I like them. And I think at the end of the day, I'm going to have to say that the Phillies could repeat.
Interesting.
Let me take that back, because I think the Mets will come out of there. I think the Mets are going to win the World Series.
So you're calling for your home team favorite, the Mets. Certainly, arguably, one of the best teams. Great core lineup, fabulous pitching. Question mark now with their closer being injured, as we mentioned in the World Baseball Classic.
By the way, Verlander's injured too, so that doesn't make it any easier. But I think over the course of time, there'll be a dogfight down at the end. They've got to overcome Atlanta. They got to overcome Phillies. It's going to be tough.
John, you're up. What do you think?
I would agree. I think it's going to be tough. The way I envision it, and I tried not to be biased in my predictions, but I do think the Phillies are going to win the division, because for the most part, I do think the Mets are going to be careful when it comes to this regular season. I think if they're going to put a guy like Justin Verlander on the injured list to start the season, I think it proves that they're going to be really cautious with their older players, and that they're going to try to get through the season in one piece. And they're going to, I think what they learned from last year is that you can peak too soon. And listen, the Braves went on an incredible run to win the division. And I don't think there was much the Mets could have done differently, except maybe, not get swept by the Cubs, but in September. But listen, that kind of stuff happens. I do think they were a little bit tired at the end. I think they'll adjust. And I think while they may not win the division, I do think they're capable of going on a run to the World Series. I don't know if anybody is going to beat Houston. I do think they've got better than even odds of repeating, even though I look at my TV screen now and they're losing to the White Sox. Yeah, it's still early. But I do like teams like Toronto. I think the Yankees will make the playoffs. I think Minnesota is going to make the playoffs. I like Milwaukee out of the Central. I like San Diego in the West. And with the Dodgers, I think if there's going to be one surprise, my surprise is that I think the Dodgers could miss the playoffs. And I only say that because they didn't really have too much of an offseason in terms of acquisitions. I think they're saving everything to next year to try to get Otani. And I do think there's going to be, I think Arizona with their young core could sneak up on them for this year only. I think if there's going to be a big surprise, that's going to be it. But I like the Astros and the Mets in the World Series. And unfortunately, I think the Astros will probably have the advantage and win it again. But I in that respect, I hope I'm wrong.
Yep. Hope you're wrong, too.
Yeah.
One last kind of a rhetorical question, being a Yankee fan and you guys being Met fans. Who owns New York? Is it the Yankees or the Mets? I think it probably comes down to where you hail from. I said you guys are Queens boys. I was a Fort Lee boy, so I could literally almost walk to Yankee Stadium, almost. So who owns New York?
I think the Yankees own New York, and I'm a Yankee fan too. So I think the Yankees own it. But it's whoever is hot is going to own it.
I would tend to agree. I think the Yankees have consistently outpaced the Mets in terms of playoff appearances and performances. So I think right at this very moment, the Yankees own it. But I think if the Mets – I think this is a Mets town that's – I think this is a Yankee – this is a Yankee town that wants to identify as a Met town. I think if the Mets go on a big run, especially with the team laden with stars the way they have – I think they could easily take it over with a big-time playoff run and a World Series appearance.
Well, being a big Yankee fan, though, I have to admit, though, it's sort of like the Mets seem to be the people's team, if you will. You know, where the Yankees are more, they wear the pinstripes, they're more businesslike, they approach things in a businesslike manner. One of the things that I read, and it pissed me off last year, I have to get my pet peeve in. After all, it is my show. But I can be frank. It is Being Frank, so allow me to be. But once again, they took 20 premium games that we're already paying for. I pay for the YES Network. Specifically, my neighbor thinks I'm crazy. I said, well, I have to watch my Yankees, so I'm willing to pay something. Now they want you to pay on top of that, with exclusive games on, what is it?
Apple TV.
Apple TV, yeah.
Amazon Prime. So they've a $7 billion franchise. The Yankees are worth $7 billion. Need to get more money by preventing their fan base from seeing their games unless they pay even more money to see them. And I got
they charge their own players for Wi-Fi on the team plane.
Come on.
Yeah, they do.
True. Look it up. Google
it. It is true.
Don't make me hate my Yankees, but every once in a while, I do have to look the other way and say, you're kidding me. And I'm telling you, I'll refuse to watch those games. I just won't. Maybe I'll catch the score the next day, but I'm telling you, it tarnishes their appeal somewhat, because you realize that the most important thing to them seems to be the money and not the fan base. But then again, we can't complain. You got to pay $140 billion or whatever for Judge. You got to pay another $100 million for Cole. You want the great players. The money's got to come from somewhere. I guess that's
And that's why parking at Citi Field is $40 now instead of $25.
That's right.
Wow. Yeah. Incredible. Last thoughts, gentlemen?
Now I'm looking forward to a tremendous baseball season. Even though we had an easygoing winter, now the days are long again. You know, get past this cold snap that we have on. Give me the spring. Let the flowers come out. Give me baseball. I'm a happy guy.
The boys of summer. John, last thoughts?
I'm just so thankful to have been a part of this with you guys. And yes, I'm so glad baseball is back, but now we need that baseball weather to go with it. I'm looking forward to a great season, and maybe we'll do an all-star break show. I'm ready for it. Yeah. Let's do it.
Great fun, guys. Great fun. We'd like to thank our guests for being frank in their intelligent conversation. And of course, a special thanks to our listeners who take the time to give us a voice in their lives. Remember, we offer a fresh topic every week, and you can catch us wherever and whenever you get your favorite podcasts. Remember, like Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and all the others. You can also check us out on the Being Frank Facebook page. It's public, so just look it up. There's lots of little cool nuggets in there. And I'd like to leave you, of course, with two last things. One, and I'll ask you guys, do you have a favorite yogiism? You know, Yogi Berra with his malaprops. I think you don't even have to be a baseball fan to know them. Joe, do you have a favorite yogiism? You can think off the top of your head.
No, I can't get the vision. I played golf with Yogi one time. Yeah. And I look over and he's standing by a tree doing you know what. And I can never get that Yogi image.
You can't unsee it.
Can't unsee it. And what did I do, Frank? I took a photo.
John, I don't know if you can top that one.
No, I don't know if I should try to top that. I've always been partial to 80% of the game is half mental.
Yeah.
I saw a fork in the road and I took it. But now if I envision Yogi Berra taking a fork in the road, I'm going to envision him taking a leak at that fork.
He's standing by a tree. That's what he said.
There you go.
Well, I have one that I heard today that I had never heard before, and it's classic. Love is the most important thing in the world, but baseball is pretty good too. I think that was kind of our theme tonight. We tend to agree. I want to leave you with some great music from The Scoop. The Scoop is Rhea Vogel, Ray LaBella, Mark Valentine, and Naomi Camilleri. And their really rocking tune called Rain on Me. It's The Scoop. Folks, thank you for listening. Guests, thank you for joining us. Neil, thanks for driving the bus. And we'll see you on the next Being Frank. I'm your host, Frank Lobono. Thanks so much for joining us.
I don't care what they say about me. I'm just happy to have you. If I live to 103, I will always want you. Your lips seduce me like red wine. Let it rain down on me.
Rain on me.
I hate to see you suffering.
Suffering.
All in all, it's not so bad.
Not so bad.
Life is short, girl. Don't be sad. Now, 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 don't be sad. You can't hold on forever. Your world's like a sinking ship in the wicked stormy weather. Just happy to have you. If I live to 103, I will always want you.
HudsonRiverRadio.com. We're so good, we don't need a transmitter.